football on off the ball.
We're victims here of just the quantity of football that is played. And it's tough in Brazil because it's a huge country. So there's lots of travelling and there's just too many games. And the Brazilian calendar is an eternal effort to try and fit 3 litres into a bottle that only holds 2.
Join in the obsession. Subscribe now at offtheball.com/join.
I think they'll go all the way to the final, to be honest.
Yeah?
Yeah. I believe in my county and I suppose they're good at football, they just have to believe in themselves.
I love playing 12, I love playing 10, I love being on the pitch, to be honest.
Are you confident?
Absolutely not.
No!
Thank you for all the supporters, thank you for the team, thank you France. Merci la France, merci les baguettes, merci les croissants. Je vous aime, I love you.
Hello, happy Thursday, and welcome to another episode of Word on the Street, where every week we take a trending sporting topic, something that is dominating the headlines, and we bring it to the public. I'm sat in Susanna's chair today, as she's just back from a very exciting commercial trip to London, which I'm sure you'll see a lot about and off the ball over the next couple of weeks. But as always, I've Rachel here. She's on Zoom today. How are you, Rachel?
I'm very good. Thank you, Eve. How are you?
I'm really good. I'm really happy because we get to talk about F1 for the next kind of 40 minutes to an hour, which just makes it feel like I've said, can I have fun at work today? And everyone has just said yes.
And that's why I didn't come into the studio.
F1 kind of Rachel's enemy. You kind of have a frenemy relationship with the sport of Formula One.
Yeah, I do. I feel like I should preempt the entire podcast by saying that I don't hate F1. I don't hate F1. Those comments were taken out of context. I maybe said that I didn't think Formula One was the greatest spectator sport to attend if you weren't the biggest fan. You know, it was hard to get into it because it's so complicated.
And in fairness, I mean, Abu Dhabi is the race that's coming up. And while it is the last race of the season and there's a lot on the line and it's very exciting, it's also notoriously a track that doesn't have a lot of overtaking. So I think both things can be true at once. And in this week, they kind of are.
Exactly. And this week is something I can get behind because, you know, 3 guys going for the 1 position. I can talk about that all day. That's fine.
Yeah, that's just sport. That's just excitement. And to kind of join in the excitement, we're very happy to be joined by Kira Tracy today.
Hello, I'm so excited. I'm so excited to be talking about F1 as well today.
So, yeah, because we were kind of wondering, okay, we need to get people's opinions. We need to get as many opinions as possible. And I was worried, would we struggle with that? But no, F1 is still as popular as ever.
Oh, no, absolutely. And there's been loads of questions coming up to this. Who's going to get it? Like Rachel said, it's going to be 3 guys battling it out for the championship. We haven't seen it to this extent in a while now, not for at least 10 years or so. So it's going to be big. And Abu Dhabi, things do get heated. I always think about 2021 when it was Lewis and Max. So we know anything could happen.
Do you remember where you were watching Abu Dhabi 2021?
Sadly, I do. I actually couldn't watch the last few laps. I had to go and take a breather. My heart was in my mouth. I was at my dad's house. I was with my sister and a friend. And I literally was like, lads, I can't watch this. It was theatrical.
It was. I was in my student flat when I used to live with like a bunch of girls. We were all in this big one friend group. And I had a very important exam the next day.
Oh, no.
And I said to myself, well, you know, this is just a nice way to relax. I'll take a break from studying. I'll watch the last race of the season. You've been into such an exciting season. And then it was kind of the most psychologically torturous few
so
hours.
So stressful, like genuinely heart in the mouth type stuff.
Do you remember watching it, Rachel? Or do you remember the atmosphere building around Abu Dhabi 21? Because I feel like it kind of touched a lot of people who wouldn't be interested in F1 in the first place.
Didn't quite touch me now, Eve, I'm afraid. I didn't know. No,
I think you're better off.
Sorry.
You're better off because people have been drawing a lot of comparisons between Abu Dhabi 2021, which was between Hamilton and Verstappen, and now this year, which is between Verstappen, Piastri and Norris. And what we kind of asked this week for the pod was, who do you think will win? Who do you think should win? And who do you want to win? Which I have 3 different answers to that question. From my personal opinion, I think Norris will probably win just kind of statistically. I think maybe Verstappen should win, and I'm no fan of his, but he's just been, making up 104 points to go for a 5th title in a row is just kind of unheard of in modern F1. But who I want to win is still Oscar Piastri.
Yeah,
feeling a little
also
bit more
fair. I actually
delusional.
I would kind of swap that. I do think that Max is going to win.
Okay.
I think, and I actually do want Lando to win.
See, this is the controversial.
I know it is controversial. It is, but I think he's had a lot of character development. He's learned a lot in the last few seasons. He's matured a lot, I think, and he has put a graft in. And I do think he's been a good poster boy for McLaren. But I do think Oscar is the better driver.
Mm.
I will say that, but I just think it's Lando's time now, and there will be opportunities for Oscar. You know, he's just got a little bit more experience, but I do think that Oscar is the more clinical driver, but I think Max is just a machine, and I do think McLaren are more capable of choking and messing up the strategy, as we've seen in the last two races. So yes. Vegas and Qatar, they both messed it up for the lads.
Yeah, and I think we'll touch onto this more later on, but sort of the fact that it's McLaren with their papaya team rules nearly sometimes fighting against themselves versus Verstappen with a Red Bull team who can put all of their resources behind
exactly.
him.
Yeah.
Makes it so kind of different. And I suppose maybe Rachel, from the outside looking in, when you think of fairness within this is so unlike any other sport, the idea of you are competing directly with your teammate, but you're also sharing resources and sharing information. The drama definitely is heightened. Like, are you going to watch the race at the weekend because of the drama of the situation?
Absolutely. And even having researched it for this week's pod, I'm like, okay, this I can totally get behind. And I was actually talking to Dara from work last week. We were chatting to him about cycling. And I was like, oh, it's kind of similar to that. And, you know, we were talking about Ben Healy breaking out ahead of the group and how you'd need maybe teammates to be stronger to, like, follow you. But it seems like the opposite is happening with the F1, with the both McLaren drivers. And it's a pity because, like, you know, you'd think being part of a team would make you stronger and give you more advantages. I'm going for Piastri purely because I'm like, oh, he had such a good start to the season and you'd hate to see him die away off like that, you know?
Mm.
And it just seems like, I know you're going to chat a bit more about that papaya rule, but it seems like he got a bit shafted by that the most, did he?
Well, certainly that's what people are arguing after Qatar last week.
Yes, and I would say now that we're getting to this finale, they have decided, okay, we are going to go on for Lando. But I do think that is just, again, that tiny bit more experience. I think de facto, because of that, they have put Oscar in that kind of second seat. But I think it's kind of fair. Although I do, again, he could be the better driver, but I don't think this will discourage him. We saw Lando last year, how close he got, and he fell at the last hurdle. And I think, right, let him have his moment, let him get it. And then again, fair racing again. We'll see what happens next year. And I think it will be on a lot more of a level playing field between the two of them.
Would you have preferred perhaps McLaren to come out maybe before the summer break, certainly, because if it was during the summer break, Piastri had such a lead. Mm. Would you have preferred that they could come out and say, we are going to implement a number one, number two system, either for Norris because he's been here longer, or for Piastri, say, at the summer breaks, he's been leading? Or do you think ultimately that managing it the way they've done is the fairest thing?
I actually do, because they are such good drivers and they're on equal, I mean, all three, the final three, if you will, Max, Oscar, Lando, have all got 7 wins.
Mm.
So really, it could have been anyone's game, and it still is. But I think they are doing the right thing by letting them battle it out. I do see this as a bit of an experiment, and I do think it's fair game for both drivers. But I think now that the dust has kind of settled, it's like, right, it's going to be either one of you, but we are going to push Lando. He is that poster boy.
Yeah, I think whenever I was thinking about this title fight, people keep bringing up Abu Dhabi 21, but the title fight that I keep thinking of is Abu Dhabi 2010,
yeah,
where you had Alonso, Webber, Vettel, and to a lesser extent Hamilton, who was quite a bit behind. And it was 4 drivers going in on the final day. And I would have been, as a kid, a very big Vettel fan. So it's a memory I love bringing up, and I was definitely going to talk about it today. He is in the position right now that Oscar Piastri is in, where you're kind of 15, 16 points behind and you're needing things to go right in order for you to win it. You know, I think the issue with Alonso and Webber back in the day was that they got bogged down and made bad strategy calls and got stuck behind Petrov at the pits. Now, for McLaren, what they need to ensure is that something that happened last week in Qatar doesn't happen again,
yeah,
where they're caught on the hop and are I think Bernie Collins, who is the strategist, former Aston Martin strategist and now a pundit for Sky, she said, it's never a good idea for a team to do what nobody else is doing. If everybody else is doing something, you know, it's probably more than likely the correct thing to do. And McLaren shot themselves in the foot last week. But the difference is it can only benefit Verstappen.
Yeah, and even if we look back at Las Vegas, they got both McLarens got disqualified because they, you know, they had skid gear on to try and make it, you know, to control the car more, and they both got disqualified. They both were on podiums. It was so detrimental. And if that happens, like this week, obviously they won't. They'll be doing all the checks and balances, but it's so risky to do that. Literally a few races out before the final. So they could be really shooting themselves in the foot, both strategy-wise and also just actual technicalities. The actual car itself, I don't know what they were playing at the last few weeks, but it's, like you say, it's really giving Max an advantage, both psychologically and quite literally on a point-to-point basis.
Exactly, especially for somebody like Verstappen who has won championships before,
whereas
Lando and Oscar are both competing for their first. Obviously, they'd won on the junior tours, but like even the momentum is behind Verstappen right now. The experience is with him right now. To have caught up 104 points is unheard of. Really,
I honestly think I was watching Brazil a few weeks ago, and I think that really epitomised what Max Verstappen's all about. From the pit lane to the podium, that is the drive that we're talking about here, and that's what makes him, you know, a complete. And I'm not even a Max fan per se, but you know, you've got to recognise grit, talent, and just an absolute beast in the car. I think that really epitomises his strategy and his kind of his race style, and I think that could potentially completely and utterly benefit him and see him go 5 for 5 in the last few years.
Yeah, because we had a comment in on Facebook and from Sharon, and she goes, the fact that it's come down to the last race, it has to be Max winning it for me. McLaren messed it up and Max doesn't have the car to match, but never gave up and is simply the best driver. Lucky to watch him. Yeah. And I feel like even, again, as I said, I'd be no huge Verstappen fan. You do have to acknowledge he's doing something special.
100%. And like you say, Red Bull are completely throwing everything behind him. Mm. So he really has, you know, he has it all going for him right now.
So you're...
As a total outsider, like, coming in to watch this, do you think that Max has just done something exceptional to get to this point? Or both McLaren drivers have really just kind of fumbled the ball when they should have been seeing it out a bit more?
I would be in the argument of a little bit of both.
100%. Okay. Agree.
You know, like Piastri being 104 points up in the end of September and now Max being ahead of him, is McLaren have questions to answer for that, how they haven't been as consistent. Verstappen and Red Bull, Christian Horner's leaving in the summer really seemed to have spurred them on to a far better run of form. So it's a case of McLaren underperforming and Red Bull perhaps overperforming, especially since the summer.
Yeah, and Max Verstappen's had a little girl as well between this. So nothing has put him off his pace. Like, he really has the last few seasons, like a freight train, just really come up from behind. And I do think, again, like exactly that, McLaren have fumbled the strategy. They've really messed it up. And Max, again, Brazil really does exemplify that. He is just coming now for the top spot and nothing will stop him.
Exactly. So we got voice notes in, as we always do. So we're talking about this kind of how exciting it's been to watch Verstappen this year and how it's sort of unprecedented, the ground he's kind of made up. But at the same time, we've seen the same three drivers win 21 of the 23 races. George Russell's the only driver who's won the other two. Whereas last year we saw 7 different race winners. So you had a voice note in from Eva talking about how she found the experience of watching this year versus last year.
I was thinking about this question and I realized I completely forgot that this year had so little race winners. And I also just completely forgot like monumentous things that happened last year, like Lewis in Silverstone. And, you know, we always had a mix for who was going to end up on the podium. And now in this season, when you kind of have 2 out of 3, most of the time's guaranteed, Ferrari aren't as competitive. I don't think this season was technically as enjoyable, but I am an Oscar fan, so it suited me for a while, but it did get a lot more enjoyable when Max started winning in what is really a non-competitive car. Like, the video of him steering it as if it's like a galley pirate ship or something, it lives in my mind rent-free.
I do always find this interesting, the comparison between maybe something being technically exciting on paper versus your actual watched experience of something, and how it all does depend on your own bias of, are you a fan of this person? Are you a fan of this team? Because I'm, like, as I keep saying, and I do want to stress, that I don't like having to praise Verstappen, because I wouldn't historically be a big fan of his. But if he wasn't performing as well as he's done the last few races, it would be an incredibly boring season.
Yeah, he's like playing devil's advocate, I suppose, just to keep it interesting. And you can go with that for so long, but then if he's going to steal this at the very end on the last day, like, especially because he already has, like, when both McLaren drivers, neither of them have a title yet, like, obviously, anyone coming in from the outside like myself, you're going to go for that kind of underdog, but every sport needs a bad guy.
That, in fairness, that is very true. And what, and I, this is something I've been sort of thinking of myself in terms of Formula One. If it was to be Norris or Piastri who emerged victorious at the weekend, you know, they would be the first new champion since Verstappen. And the first new champion since Verstappen was Rosberg all the way back in 2016. There was a period of time just after Michael Schumacher finished kind of winning his titles where you had, okay, 05 was Alonso. So you had 06 Alonso. You had 07 Raikkonen. You had 08 Hamilton. You had 09 Button. And you had 2010 Vettel. So you had 5 years and five different winners. But then, so you had the period of dominance from Schumacher before. Then you had 4 years of Vettel, 2 years of Hamilton, 1 year of Rosberg, and then another 4 years of Hamilton, 4 years of Verstappen. I do think the sport is crying out for a bit more variety in who's winning year on year, even though if Verstappen was to win at the weekend and it's a fifth in the row, only done by Schumacher before, it would be an incredible feat and a historic feat. But is it necessarily the healthiest thing for the sport to have another period of dominance like that?
Well, could you consider this a period? Obviously, if you're just looking at the end result, you could consider it a period of dominance. But if he's come from, whatever, 104 points behind, it's not as if every race you're going out, like, as a supporter like you would be like, well, there's kind of no point in watching this because we just know who's going to win, you know?
Yeah.
Who is your team, Eve?
So I don't, ever since, okay, I think Formula One is a odd sport in that a lot of people would follow drivers instead of teams. And when my favorite driver retired back in 2022, I've been kind of searching for somebody else to follow. And I landed on Piastri this year, even though I would not be a McLaren fan, which has resulted in me rooting against Norris all year and rooting for Piastri. And he was leading for so long, Piastri was, the championship standings, that this weekend is going to be very stressful.
Where you go? Will you watch it at home?
I will be watching it in, there's a group me and my friends have, and we go to this pub called The Backpage in Phibsborough, and they get all done up for the F1. They have cardboard cutouts of drivers and they have flags everywhere and they show it on the big screen. And I was asked personally to mention by the girls in our group chat that we change the group chat picture every week to the driver who wins.
Nice.
So for the Piastri fans in the group chat, it's been a very difficult few months. He's not been winning that much. But what I'm kind of interested in, and you were touching on this earlier, is the papaya rules for McLaren, which a lot of people are kind of saying that's why Oscar Piastri hasn't been winning lately, in that by not dedicating yourselves to having a number one driver, by saying we're treating both of you fairly, you know, clean racing and all of this, that actually what they've just allowed is mistakes to creep in the interest of fairness, and have allowed Verstappen to kind of come up from that. In an elite sports environment, is there room for trying to keep everybody happy?
I'm so glad Susanna's not here this week, because we would just be launched into an hour-long debate on Crowley and Prendergast right now.
who? I think I recognise those names.
Yeah, I'd say she's probably, wherever she is, her ears are pricked up and she said, I need to jump on that. I don't know, like, if Piastri doesn't, which is really, you know, it's looking really unlikely that he doesn't win. If you're him next year, are you thinking, I'd rather have had the opportunities that Verstappen did and have all those resources just to myself? It sounds like I would be.
Yeah, exactly. Because, like, there was one stage in the season in the Italian Grand Prix this year where McLaren pitted Piastri first, even though Norris was ahead on the road. And you're kind of thinking, okay, that's fine. They were trying to save from an undercut. That was a strategy decision. Then they pitted Norris afterwards, and all things going well, he would have retained position. He would come out ahead of Piastri and everything would have been fine. But he had a slow pit stop. And then McLaren asked Piastri, would you please move aside and let Norris go back through? And Piastri said yes. And that 6-point swing between finishing second and third is a difference between him being 16 points behind Norris at the end of the season when he could have been 10 points behind. And it's these small decisions that might not seem that big in the moment that have now become huge and incredibly consequential and could factor into Piastri's thinking of, do I want to be part of this team in the years going forward? Am I going to be able to win a championship here?
I suppose you have to look at what he's getting, like, in all simplicity, like a pros and cons list, like, yeah, what is he actually getting from being part of McLaren, you know, as opposed to these opportunities that he's clearly not getting? Or what does he need to prove if he had the start that he did this year, and if they're not considering him their number one guy, what does he have to do?
Yeah, exactly. He's been performing magnificently this year, and as Kira had said earlier on, she thinks he probably is the better driver. But we got a voice note in from Ellen on the papaya rules. Now, she's an Oscar Piastri fan, but it's more about the experience of watching these rules and how it's affecting the racing and the team.
I think even though we should leave papaya rules behind in 2025, they have come to define the season in a lot of ways, even if the papaya rules themselves are hard to define. And I think you see that in the fight between Oscar Piastri and Lando Norris across the season, and also how the papaya rules inadvertently contributed to this three-way championship battle we're seeing go all the way to Abu Dhabi. Because I think this emphasis on clean racing and no contact and pure fairness, if you want to call it that, has ruined in some ways the enjoyment of races. You see something like in Hungary when Oscar makes a lunge at a corner on Lando, he's reminded of how we go racing, was what he was told, definitely emphasizing a bit more cautious driving. And then also you see something like in Monza where Oscar is asked to give a position back for nothing that he did, but purely because of a slow pit stop on Lando's side. And it's that emphasis on fairness of McLaren that I think makes a lot of people frustrated with McLaren. They talk about letting the drivers go race, let the drivers go racing. But then you see a lot sometimes when McLaren are trying to actively stop that.
And I think ultimately what this is doing is leaving some people with a sour taste in their mouths. We had a comment in on TikTok from Bradley, who said, McLaren must have promised it to Oscar next year to have his car suck this bad the last few races, which the conspiracy theories are running wild. There's always conspiracy theories in F1 of the team is sabotaging this driver in the interest of keeping the peace with one party or the different party. I don't think I subscribe to that, but I definitely do subscribe to the idea that in trying to keep everything as fair as possible, what they've actually done is allowed Verstappen to come back at them, and they haven't given their drivers the best chance they could. Because, Rachel, I'm going to outline a situation that can happen at the weekend. And I'd like to know what you would do in this situation, because I feel like everyone has a different answer. There is a possibility on Sunday that Verstappen is leading the race, that Piastri is running in P3 and Norris is running in P4. If Norris wants to win the world championship, he needs to be in P3. If you are Oscar Piastri, you have been leading the championship for an incredibly long time. You have maybe felt a bit shafted with some of the team's decisions throughout the years. Certainly the Australian media, who are on your side, feel that you're being let down by your team. Your team comes on the radio and says, you need to give up this position to allow Norris, your direct rival and teammate, to win the championship Do you move aside in that situation?
I mean, in that scenario, he's got no chance of winning it himself. Sure, he doesn't.
No.
If he's not winning. Then at that elite level, I think they care about winning and nothing else. Like a second place, you speak to anyone, you speak to even people who've come home from like major competitions who've won a silver or a bronze medal. And they say, obviously, yeah, it's great to medal, but it's one of those, you know, quotes like everything after first is just the next best loser.
Yeah.
So I think if your teammate, even though he's your direct rival, has a chance of winning and you can't win, pull in.
Okay.
Throw up. Throw into fourth gear.
Because I feel like that's the argument people were making about Red Bull for years. They have their junior team, Toro Rosso, or what used to be called Toro Rosso, a million years old, so I'm still calling it Toro Rosso. It's called Racing Bulls now. And they have, since they're owned by the same company, there's always this idea of, well, those drivers will always pull aside for Verstappen or whoever. To they have kind of three extra cars on the grid who can pull aside if needed. I suppose having it being your direct rival adds a little bit of spice to that. But at the end of the day, all Norris needs to do is finish P1, P2 or P3, and that championship is his. Piastri has a far more difficult task. He needs to have a carbon copy of Sebastian Vettel's victory in 2010, where everything has to go right. And he also needs to do everything right, pole and a lights to flag victory on Sunday. Verstappen has a little bit more leeway where he needs to win, or he needs to finish very highly with Norris finishing off the podium. But if he does win, as we were saying earlier, it's a historic victory. And here's what Kate had to say in a voice note about what this would kind of mean in modern F1.
So I think if Max Verstappen somehow manages to win this title, he should be considered at least alongside the other F1 legends of this century, like Michael Schumacher and Lewis Hamilton, not pulling slightly ahead of them. If you look at Michael Schumacher and Lewis Hamilton's titles, yes, they were competitive years most of the time. Yes, Lewis Hamilton had to fight against his teammate Nico Rosberg. Michael Schumacher faced competition from other drivers on the field. But no one has come from a 104-point gap down. The precedent, I suppose, for this weekend is what Sebastian Vettel did in 2010. But even at that, it was a much closer race that whole year. Whereas for Max, he was on the back foot. I mean, having a champion that has never led the championship until the final race in and of itself is just, it's so impressive. And I think with Max Verstappen as well, he gets a lot of flack and he gets a lot of hate, but people hate him because they hate him. And he's definitely the best driver of his generation. Maybe if he does it this weekend, I think he just edges it for greatest of this century. He was helped a little bit along the way with McLaren mistakes, but you don't get to a point where you've closed a 104-point gap without just being that good.
I think, you know, for someone like me who wouldn't be his biggest fan, you have to put your hands up and you have to say, win or lose this title, he's done a remarkable thing. And the kind of the asterisks that maybe would be beside some of his older titles, especially Abu Dhabi 21 and the way in which he won it, wouldn't be there this year. If there's any asterisks at all, it's just because did you win it as much as McLaren have lost it, kind of thing, and really clutching defeat from the jaws of victory, which is, I always find very sad in F1, because yes, at the end of the day, it's you're a driver in a car, but the pit crews and the mechanics that travel all around the world on far lower salaries than these F1 drivers, the hundreds of people back home in factories in the UK, in Italy, in wherever, who are working on these cars. And it could all go horribly wrong. Like if Verstappen DNFs on the first lap in Abu Dhabi on Sunday, all of this building tension and all of this hard work throughout the year is gone in a split second.
It's what makes it so entertaining for you to watch.
That is true.
And for me, of course, that I'll be queuing into that. Like, so much goes into this. So much expense. So many people behind the scenes. I know there's people behind the scenes of every team, but the fact that they get involved mid-race in this, yeah. I think is probably one of the things that makes F1 so unique. You know, it's like being able to bring physios and doctors on in the middle of a of a game and just be like, I'll fix you up there, you know, for like 15 minutes.
It's crazy.
And we'll see what we can do.
And I feel like mechanics and engineers and everything are going to be in the forefront of conversations now going into 2026 as we have some new regulations coming in, new era regulations. The cars are going to look different. They promise me the cars are going to be better. The cars are going to be faster and overtaking is going to be easier. But they promised us that back in 2023 as well. So we'll see about that. But we'll hear again our last voice note of the day from Eva on what she's looking forward to next season.
So I'm looking towards 2026 because of the regulation changes, and I can't wait to see how that impacts everything. Who will have the top car? Mercedes dominance again, question mark. But I'm also a big fan of 2026 already because I think now teams are starting to get really, really strategic in the sense that team principals now, the most recent hirings have been engineers. And I think that should be the way we move forward. So I think people are starting to get a bit more savvy about how best they develop a team strategy. And we'll see.
Another thing that we're going to see next year, as well as new regulations in Formula One and a new team, which brings us up to more drivers, is we're probably going to see Alex Dunn in F2 again. And this is Ireland's Alex Dunn. He's from Offaly, and he had been leading the championship in Formula 2 for a little while, kind of in the spring. He didn't end up winning it, but that's probably no bad thing, because if you win F2, you can't be in it again, and your development can sometimes struggle with that. So this week, we tasked Hannah. Welcome, first of all, Hannah, welcome to the pod.
Thank you so much. I'm so nervous.
Hannah's one of the interns in our office, and she's been doing her homework on Formula 2, on which drivers that I think we see in F1 nowadays who've won it, which drivers have got into F1 despite not winning it, but basically what happens to an F2 driver when they win?
Okay, so basically, like you said, you can't go on and do it again. So if you're a champion of F2, that's it. There's no multiple F2 champion. And sometimes that means you have to be in the right point of your career at the right time compared to other teams, compared to, you know, not everyone has a linear journey to F1. Oscar Piastri is the perfect example. He was sidelined for a year because he was with Alpine at the Alpine Driver Development Program, and there just wasn't a seat for him there. So there was big controversy. It's always been a topic of contention in F2 whether or not it's worth a driver's time, because it's not necessary. But whether it's worth your time if you're not guaranteed a seat. And there was obviously, I don't know what to call it, Twittergate maybe, where he announced that he would not be driving for Alpine. They never told him that. He found out the same way the rest of us did.
I remember that happening. I remember it being insane, and just him being announced for Alpine, him having personally signed with McLaren, which has turned out to be an incredible decision when you look at Alpine's trajectory versus McLaren's trajectory. But he is, you know, he was a unique case, such a talented underage driver that you kind of felt it was inevitable he'd end up getting a seat.
Yeah, because he won Formula Renault and then Formula 3 and then F2, all back to back, 3 consecutive years, and then he was without a seat. And it was such a waste, like, watching him. Like, I remember watching, there was 2 pre-season testings because there was regulation changes, and just watching him on Sky Sport like a pundit, it just felt, you hate to see it, like.
And he's one of the lucky drivers who ended up getting a seat.
Yeah, but there's Mark Webber.
Exactly. But there's certainly drivers who we've seen win F2 who seem to have disappeared.
Yeah.
Tell us about some of those.
I suppose Théo Pourchaire would be a great example. You know, like, he didn't win it in his rookie season the same way some big names like Piastri and Leclerc and Russell did. But he had a great battle with Felipe Drugovic as well the season before. And, you know, even Théo Pourchaire's runner-up, which was Frederic Vesti, like, you only really see him on the Mercedes social media, and he's always there in the background. But it's just, you know, you're not even a runner-up is guaranteed anything. And, like, you can't even blame people like Alonso or whatever when you're so good, But maybe that seat will open up with Alonso. Maybe there's rumours going around. I don't know if it was confirmed. Sky Italia confirmed it.
Yes, so Alonso is, he's one of the oldest, I'm going to say he is the oldest driver on the grid. but I think his Sky Italia, his girlfriend that's expecting a baby, so congratulations to them. Does that change priorities? Hamilton, will a seat free up there in the next couple of years? His Ferrari career isn't going as well as he had hoped. He's also on the other side of 40. And of course, we have two new teams, or two new drivers coming in for Cadillac. Well, I say new drivers. It's Perez and Bottas. These are old, old hands. They know what they're doing.
Yeah.
But it's a new team, more seats. And I feel like once we get through the first year of the new regulations, see which teams perform well, which teams aren't, that's when you're going to see a few shifts in the driver market. So Alex Dunn, will, you know, isn't with the McLaren development program anymore. He's rumours of him going to the Alpine development program, kind of an inverse of the Oscar Piastri story. What do you think, from based on what you've kind of researched and seen, would be his best case scenario kind of next year?
Best case scenario, he goes back into F2. He has the funding. You know, he doesn't have a program at the moment. He's a free agent, essentially. And it would just be great if he could find an academy. You know, when he left McLaren, it was kind of, everyone thought, word on the street, everyone thought that it was Red Bull. And Helmut Marko didn't really help these rumours at all, because he commented on Dunn's aggressiveness and how quick he is, and he said that's exactly the kind of driver that Red Bull would be looking for. Red Bull obviously have two teams, so that would be great if he went there, because, you know, they're always, it's musical chairs at Red Bull. It's musical chairs all over F1, but Red Bull really set the standard for that, and they really hold their drivers to a high account, even if the car isn't there. So that would be great. He's also tested, not exactly tested with Ferrari, but back in 2022 when he was in F4, British F4 and Italian F4, he was scouted by them for like this program, and he went around Furano for a few days. Nothing ever came of that, but it was great to know that like teams of that caliber are looking at him. I always thought Aston Martin would look at him, you know, like when they started their academy with Felipe Drugovich. I thought, and Dunn was so successful at that time, I really thought maybe it was the green that was like connecting in my brain. I thought that maybe there'd be a spot for him there, but...
Well, never say never. I think you're right in that they seem like a team that would suit him.
Mm-hmm.
They're a team that's based in the UK again, and, you know, they have the funds available to Aston Martin are incredible.
Yeah, but absolutely.
They're stuck with a very odd driver lineup of the undeniably talented but undeniably aging Alonso, and then Stroll, who is the son of the team owner.
Yeah.
So it's a difficult and an odd one. They always feel like they should be doing better than they are if they just delegated their resources a bit more cleverly. Hopefully, maybe one of those days that those resources include Alex Dunn.
Mm-hmm.
But whatever the case may be, he can have an extra year in F2. He can have as many years as he wants, as long as he doesn't win the thing. And it's no bad thing to be getting as much development and as much practice as you can while the new regulations are settling in. So thank you very much, Hannah, for that. That was very informative. Thank you, Rachel, for joining us on Zoom. I hope you throw an eye over the F1 this weekend.
I will, of course.
And thank you very much. I'll save our word in the studio for Hannah, who didn't get to answer this question. Who do you think is going to win at the weekend? Who do you think should win? And who do you want to win?
I don't want Lando to win. It would be great to see Oscar to win, but I think it has to be Verstappen. He like overcame so much. It just has to be Max, and he'd deserve it for sure.
Perfect. All right, we'll leave it at that very nice note. So that was Word on the Street. That was Word on the Street. Thank you very much for joining us, and we will chat to you next week.
I think they'll go all the way to the final, to be honest.
Yeah?
Yeah. I believe in my county, and I suppose they're good at football, they just have to believe in themselves.
I love playing 12, I love playing 10, I love being on the pitch, to be honest.
Are you confident?
Absolutely not.
No!
Thank you for all the supporters, thank you for the team, thank you France. Merci la France, merci les baguettes, merci les croissants. Je vous aime, I love you.